I will not support any plan that puts all the burden for closing our deficit on ordinary Americans. And I will veto any bill that changes benefits for those who rely on Medicare but does not raise serious revenues by asking the wealthiest Americans or biggest corporations to pay their fair share.
President Barack Obama, in a speech yesterday, offered recommendations to the supercommittee charged with trying to balance the budget over the next decade. I'm Dean Kallenbach, filling in for Joy Cardine here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Happy to be with you this morning, Tuesday, September 20th. It's 8 minutes after 7 o'clock. The political posturing began during the speech and continues throughout the morning, or through this morning, as members of Congress and presidential candidates plant their flags as it relates to the proposal. And while we won't be able to avoid talking politics about such a political document, we do want to spend this hour looking at the elements of the proposal itself. Will it do what the president says it will do? Can it help balance the budget and lessen our national debt? What's your reaction to the plan? Do you think it could work? Call in with your comments and questions about the president's deficit reduction proposal at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send your email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us on Twitter at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest for the hour is Mark Goldwine, Senior Policy Director at the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, a nonpartisan nonprofit organization, or a bipartisan nonprofit organization in Washington, D.C., that educates the public about significant fiscal policy. And Mark Goldwine, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thanks so much for having me.
So as we look over this proposal by the president to the Congressional Supercommittee developing plans for budget deficit elimination over the next decade, the president claims it will make a $3 trillion difference, more than twice the deficit reduction that the supercommittee has been charged to find. Would this proposal do what the president says, or is he overestimating savings or revenue?
Well, not exactly. The president actually, in some cases, has talked about this as a $4.4 trillion plan when you add it to the deficit reduction we already have done under the Budget Control Act. The problem is, in his numbers, he's essentially counting, banking the savings from drawing down the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. But those policies are already in place. We're kind of already withdrawing the troops, and we're already assuming that. So to count these policies twice actually inflates the numbers by about a little bit over a trillion, maybe closer to $1.5 trillion.
So again, we're stepping a little bit back to the political side. The Republicans said the war spending cut is a gimmick, so it sounds like you agree with that contention.
I think that's right. There's a kernel of a good policy hidden in this gimmick, which is right now the war spending is not subject to the same types of budget controls that the rest of the budget is subject to. And I think it is important to bring it into the mix. Otherwise, politicians will do things like try to move the regular defense budget into the war spending. So that's a smart policy to bring it under budget control. But to then count the $1.1 trillion of savings and say that's a new policy for deficit reduction, that's a gimmick.
Some economists say this talk about belt tightening should wait until the economy gets back on its feet. Should the president have held off on announcing his plan and focused on jobs now?
No, absolutely not. An important part of any long-term economic growth strategy or medium-term economic growth strategy or even short-term economic growth strategy is getting the fiscal situation under control. That doesn't mean making cuts this year, but it means putting in place a plan now, which gradually and over time will put the debt on a stable path. That's going to reassure the markets that we're good for our money. That's going to stop us from any further downgrades from the rating agencies. That's going to give the business community more certainty about tax and spending policy. And if we do that deficit reduction right, we can do it in a pro-growth way that enhances U.S. competitiveness through changes to the tax and spending code.
I want to spend the next few minutes ticking off some of the elements of the plan and getting your reaction to them, if I can. And we've heard already your response to the $1 trillion credit for cutting war spending. But the president's plan would also reduce spending for Medicare and Medicaid by $580 billion. Now, that would seem to indicate that those cuts in those that cuts in entitlement programs are inevitable, since the Republicans are already calling for massive cuts in such programs. Is that how you read it?
Well, put politics aside for a minute. Reductions in entitlements are inevitable because entitlements are driving us off the oblivion. Right now, Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security are growing far faster than the economy, and they cannot continue to do that forever. So one way or another, we are going to have to make changes to slow the growth of those programs. I was very happy to see that President Obama has put forward his own plan to start to slow the growth of Medicare and Medicaid, at least. And most of his reductions actually don't affect beneficiaries. They change kind of payments for providers, and they enact other reforms. And those are things we should do, although we're going to have to go further.
How would you recommend we go further?
The president has this philosophy, which is a reasonable one, that he's not going to touch beneficiaries unless there's revenue on the table. And also, he doesn't touch existing beneficiaries and doesn't do anything until 2017. The problem is there's only so much we can do to squeeze down payments to doctors and hospitals and drug companies, et cetera. At some point, we're actually going to have to ask seniors to take a little bit of a more active role in controlling their own health care costs. One way which we found to do that actually can save seniors money is to restrict these so-called Medigap plans. These are supplemental insurance that people buy to cover their copays and deductibles in Medicare. The problem with these plans is they actually kind of distort the market because they make it look as if healthcare is free. And, you know, in the private sector, one insurance company would never let you use another insurance to kind of mess up their soundness. But that's what's happening with Medicare. And if we restrict these Medigap policies so people can't purchase them in order to hide their costs, it's both going to reduce overutilization of care, which is going to save Medicare money, but it's also actually going to reduce people's Medigap premiums. So that's where I would start.
Now, even though President Obama did propose some cuts to entitlement programs, he said he'd veto cuts to entitlement programs without the revenue increases he proposes. Do we need both the carrot and the stick in this case?
I've done all the math, and I don't know how you can have a plan that is acceptable to the American people, that stabilizes and reduces the debt, and does it entirely on the spending side. In addition to the fact that the numbers don't just work, if we ignore the revenue side, we're ignoring the fact that there's all sorts of social policy and distributional policy that actually takes place in the tax code. We have all these deductions, credits, exclusions, which are actually just spending in the tax code. And it would be pretty silly to ignore those, even as we're going after the less hidden entitlements on the spending side.
Mark Goldwein joins us. He's with the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. Mark Goldwein, farm subsidies were among the targets for the president's proposed spending cuts, and here in Wisconsin that's going to be noticed. Is that something you see as a necessary cut?
I do. The president was important to talk about the importance of disaster funding and extending relief in cases of natural disaster. He also talked about strengthening, in some ways, crop insurance. Where the president called for the biggest cuts was in direct payments. These payments really bear no reality to what's happening today. They're, in so many ways, a relic of what used to be happening. And at fiscally austere times like these, I don't think we can afford to continue them.
Federal employees will be asked to pay more for their benefits, Well, I'm just wondering, do you think that the president there goes far enough to find savings?
I don't. I think there's plenty more room to ask federal employees to sacrifice more. I don't think we should be beating up on federal employees for the sake of beating up on them, but they have a very generous pension deal. They've had very generous raises in recent years. They have very generous health care, and they have job security that nobody in the private sector has.
I think the federal reductions are something like 1.2% over a 3-year period in take home pay.
That's right. If you think about it this way, federal employees now contribute about 1/18 of the cost of their pensions, with the taxpayer paying the other 17/18. President Obama wants to increase that to 2 or 3/18. The Fiscal Commission actually recommended gradually over time increasing it so federal employees would have to bear half the cost of their pension. Given what's going on in the private sector, And assuming we do it gradually, I think that's a fair policy.
I want to move to the revenue hikes portion briefly, and then certainly welcome callers. We're speaking with Mark Goldwein, the Senior Policy Director for the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, about President Obama's proposal to the Congressional Super Committee to reduce the deficit. And he did include some spending cuts. He also included some revenue hikes. Warren Buffett does find a way to keep his name in the news. His comment a few weeks ago that his secretary pays a higher percentage of her income in taxes than he does helped President Obama frame his Buffett rule, a part of the deficit-cutting proposal that would establish a minimum tax on individuals earning $1 million or more in income. Is this class warfare, as the Republican leadership claims?
Well, I actually just think it's not the most ideal way to do tax policy. Creating new minimum taxes is going to create extra confusion. What we should do is get rid of the problem in the first place, which is there's all sorts of deductions and exclusions which go primarily to the highest earners, and people don't even notice it. The tax code is not nearly as progressive as people think because we do all this spending, effectively spending the tax code on the very rich. The best way to correct this problem, to make the tax code more progressive and more competitive, is to wipe out a lot of these deductions and exclusions and use the money to lower rates for everybody.
And neither side is really proposing that we've seen at this point. Is that correct?
Well, I think there's a lot of interest in it from both sides. I think President Obama, at least rhetorically in his document, talks about lowering rates and making the tax code more competitive. Speaker Boehner, I believe last week, had a speech where he talked about doing the same thing. I think there is movement in the direction. It's just slow movement.
Mm-hmm. Ending the Bush-era tax cuts for high-income households accounts for about $800 billion of the savings in this plan. Do you feel this makes sense? Is this a direction that makes some sense?
Well, my view is we can't afford the tax policy we have today because it's not enough to pay for our government. The best thing would be not to raise rates, would be, in fact, to lower rates through tax reform and also broaden the base. That can give us a more competitive code and raise more revenue. But if policymakers aren't willing to do that, the least they can do is not make the situation worse. And continuing to extend these tax cuts, not just for the higher end, but for everyone, is making the situation worse.
We're talking with the Senior Policy Director of the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, Mark Goldwein, about the plan unveiled yesterday by President Obama that he says would slash the nation's debt by $3 trillion over the next decade. What do you make of the $1.5 billion in tax hikes on the richest Americans? And do you agree or disagree with the so-called Buffett rule? Any feelings on his proposed spending cuts like Medicare? Call us, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Send an email to talk@WPR.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let's check the weather forecast for Wisconsin. Northwestern part of the state will see highs in the upper 60s today, could get up to the mid-70s elsewhere in Wisconsin. It will be mostly cloudy. We do see a chance of showers and storms, not only today, but into tonight and tomorrow as well. Right now it's 53 degrees in Superior. Madison has 45, 54 in Milwaukee, 53 in Green Bay with some fog in Green Bay, 53 in overcast in La Crosse. Wausau has 43 degrees. I'm Dean Kallenbach in for Joy Cardine, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 7:22. I'm Dean Kallenbach in for Joy Cardine. Kids are constantly online using social media tools to post, text, tweet, etc. What does using social media and Twitter do to our child's grammar learning? After 5, join Ben Marins and his guest as they discuss kids and grammar issues they encounter using social media, OMG. Back now to our conversation about the president's proposal announced yesterday to eliminate the federal deficit. On the line with us is Mark Goldwein. He's a senior policy director for the Bipartisan Nonprofit Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. We move to the phones. Plenty of folks want to talk about this issue, and we'll start with Gary and Racine. Gary, good morning, and welcome to the show.
Good morning. I also wanted to just kind of bring to light the fact that the president is touting his $3-point-some trillion-dollar deficit reduction. on top of his $1.2 trillion. Now, the $1.2 trillion by the super committee hasn't even been addressed yet, but the president and his group is talking as though this is already done. It's not done. This is far from done. And to say that the $3 trillion will be done over 10 years is taken into, they're playing it's a game. There's no fact behind any of this stuff. Now, the one thing the Republicans are trying to say, the way I view it is, listen, we have to stop with the federal government promising to give this, this, and this. The president just, we're reducing the Social Security tax again. So that means we're not bringing enough money to cover an underfunded program already. And the Republicans are trying to say, look, these policies are not sustainable. And we're not going to just allow you to just keep raising taxes to cover not non-feasible proposals. So either get your policy in order, and then we'll talk about raising taxes, because Republicans are willing to pay their fair share, but not to poor policy. I think that's what the president is missing.
Response?
I guess I'll go in reverse order. I think that's right. We shouldn't be asking people to pay more taxes if the federal government is wasting their money. But the bottom line is, even if we do some pretty severe spending cuts, I mean, I worked on the fiscal commission, and we proposed some pretty substantial spending cuts, not only in the discretionary and defense areas, but also to Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. And even with those, it's not enough to get a debt in a stable path, so we're going to need new revenue. The way we should get that new revenue is by cutting the spending that we do in the tax code. That spending can't be exempt just because it's hidden as a tax credit instead of being explicit as a spending program. In terms of the way the president's talking about his savings, I would really try to think about his savings as it's about $1.9 trillion of new policies on top of about $1 trillion of discretionary caps, that is, caps on how much we are going to spend in our annual budgets, which is already in place, on top of taking credit for a war savings policy, which is really already in effect. And that's how you get that $4.4 trillion. But when I'm talking about this, I'm talking about this is less than $2 trillion in new deficit reduction policies.
Mark Goldwein, Gary mentioned Social Security. The president did not. He did mention Medicaid and Medicare. He didn't mention any Social Security cuts or any changes to Social Security yesterday. What do you make of that, and what would you do about Social Security?
Well, I actually think this is one of the most disappointing parts of the plan, because the president has signed up, along with Congressman Ryan and the House Republicans, and along with most of the politicians, to the most popular plan in D.C., the do-nothing plan. The problem with the do-nothing plan is Social Security is on an unsustainable path, and in 2036, there is a scheduled 23% cut to every beneficiary, rich, poor, 95-year-olds, newly disabled. Everyone is going to experience that cut. That's not fair. That's not right. And we know exactly how to avoid it. The fact that our politicians on both sides of the aisle are afraid to put forward plans is very disappointing.
Let's move next to Laverne in Monroe. Laverne, welcome to the Joy Cardine Show.
Hello, Dean. Hello, Mark. I like the president's proposal. Last week he had a jobs bill, and this week he had a how he's going to pay for it. And he, like he said earlier, he's doing it early, and that's the way the Republicans should be doing it, but they're not doing it. So that's why I think the Republicans are not going to get the job done. And I think for the class war, when the rich are already paying lower taxes than the middle class, I think it's a class war on the middle class. And at this Warren Buffett rule, I think it's a good idea you tax the hedge fund dealers higher than a 15% income, because that's how they get away with paying taxes at a lower rate than the middle class. Please comment about the Buffett rule.
Thank you for that question. The current tax code is a mess, and one of the ways it's a mess is that a lot of very wealthy people get a lot of benefits. Another way it's a mess is, frankly, it's complicated. It's expensive to figure out how to pay your taxes and do your taxes. It's not pro-growth. The rates are higher than they need to be. What we should be doing is cleaning up the entire tax code. And if we do that the right way, we can make it far more progressive. For example, the Fiscal Commission offered a plan that would effectively reduce and simplify the rates to three rates of 12, 22, and 28. And it would wipe out or reform most of the tax expenditures. Despite the fact we lowered the top rate from 35% to 28%, we still raised $1 trillion of revenue over 10 years, and we still asked the top 1% to contribute substantially more than the top 20%, which contributed substantially more than the middle of the folks. And those in the bottom quintile, those in the bottom 20% of the distribution, actually got a tax cut under the Fiscal Commission plan.
Now, some of the other revenue from the president's plan revolves around closing some tax loopholes, and at least in Wisconsin, that's even resonated with some Republicans. Wisconsin Public Radio News is reporting that Wisconsin member of Congress Sean Duffy, a Republican, says he'd be open to exploring closing loopholes to making taxes more fair. Is this an issue that might be a foothold to move this process forward, do you think?
You know, I hope so. That's what we tried to do in the Fiscal Commission, try to show Republicans, look, we don't need to raise tax rates. There's plenty of – this tax code is such a mess, we can raise plenty of money and, in fact, lower tax rates. And the way to do it is to cut all the spending in the tax code.
We are visiting with Mark Goldwine. He's from the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. It's a bipartisan nonprofit group that educates folks about what can be done to help with our budget issues, and we'll continue to visit with him through the next half hour as well. We welcome your comments and your questions. The number to call is 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or you can join us on Facebook, make a comment on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, and you can even tweet us on Twitter at the Joy Cardine Show. I'm Dean Collin, back in for Joy Cardine, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, President Obama firmly laid out a politically charged proposal to get rid of the federal deficit over the next decade yesterday. The political fur has been flying for almost 24 hours now and will continue to do so for the foreseeable future. But this hour, we want to focus on the details of the plan and explore whether they would actually do what the president says they would do. Good morning. I'm Dean Kallenbeck. I'm filling in for Joy Cardine this morning. Great to be with you. It's 7:36 on this Tuesday, September 20th. We're talking with Mark Goldwine. He's a senior policy director for a bipartisan Washington, D.C.-based organization that educates the public about significant fiscal policy. It's called the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. We welcome your questions for Mark Goldwine and your comments on the elements of the president's proposal. Call 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or comment on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Mark Goldwine, we're going to go right to the phones. We're going to ask Debbie from Eau Claire to join the conversation. Debbie, welcome.
Welcome. I'm glad to be here.
Good.
Good. I am very supportive of the president and his wishes to tax the wealthy at a higher rate. I have a real heartfelt need for the wealthy to be taxed at the same percentage rate as the poor. I feel like there's a big disparity between the rich and the poor in America, the very wealthy as compared to the very poor. The distance between those is further than any country in the world. And I think our wealthy should be a bit ashamed of that and step to the plate and pay their fair share. I am very lucky. I'm a middle American, have been able to work at a very good job. But there are those amongst us that aren't so lucky. And I think now is the time for the rich to step up and say, yes, we can do this. We have reaped our harvest from the country, and it's our time to pay our fair share.
Mark Goldwine, your response.
Well, I think that's right. We have not only a huge inequality problem, but we have a huge debt problem. And we're going to have to ask those of us who have done the best and can most afford it to make the biggest contribution to bring it under control. And not just in the tax side, but also by accepting lower Social Security benefits, by paying more for their own Medicare, by not getting as many subsidies, not getting as many farm subsidies, for example. The wealthy absolutely are going to have to pay more. That's a given not only because of inequality issues, but, you know, why did Willie Sutton rob banks? Because that's where the money is. So I totally agree with this caller that we're going to just to give more. But, and here's the but, we're not going to be able to get enough money to bring our debt under control, to make Social Security solvent, and to make Medicare and Medicaid sustainable just from asking the top 2% or top 1% of Americans to contribute. The vast majority of Americans are in some ways going to have to sacrifice. And the president's plan, even though it's not as explicit about that, does ask for sacrifice from beyond just the top 2%. It cuts spending throughout the spending code, which is going to mean pain for a lot of people.
Now, Debbie said she wants the rich to pay at the same level as the poor. And, of course, progressive tax would speak to the rich paying a higher percentage of their tax. She's satisfied. I'm wondering if the flat tax argument might start coming back into play here, which would have some attraction to at least maybe some of the more libertarian folks in the Republican side. Is that something that is a non-starter, and would that make sense in your mind?
Well, you know what? There's a lot of unfairness in the code, and there are some rich people that aren't paying their fair share. But on the whole, the current tax code is actually quite progressive. People at the top pay a lot more than people in the middle, who pay a lot more than people at the bottom. I don't think that moving to a flat tax would make it more would solve that problem. In fact, I think in some ways the flat tax would add to some of these concerns. That said, if we got rid of a lot of these deductions and exclusions, I feel like a broken record here. But if we got rid of those, we could have a flat tier tax. We could have a tax that only had two or three rates, and that were a lot less graduated, and we could still meet kind of the progressivity goals of society.
Debbie, thank you. Let's move to Chuck from Oconomowoc. Welcome to the Joy Cardine Show, Chuck.
Thank you very much. One of the things that hasn't been discussed is the majority of small companies in the United States are Subchapter S, which means the profitability of that company flows to the owner's tax return. Last numbers I saw, 60% of those making over $1 million are Subchapter S corporations. And these are the people that the government is looking towards to hire people and put them to work. So, you know, the quote-unquote millionaires tax is going to directly 60% of the small businessmen making over $1 million a year. Because your corporation brings in that much does not mean the owner is paid that much. He has to reinvest in the business, put away reserves, et cetera. And I haven't heard your caller speak to that.
Here's your opportunity, Mark Goldwine.
Sure. Well, we should understand there is no Buffett policy yet. There's a Buffett rule. The president basically put forward this philosophy that in the context of tax reform, people making and families making over $1 million shouldn't pay a lower share to taxes than others. And I think within the intent of this rule was the idea that that would be targeted at individuals and families, not at small businesses. Although it's difficult to know how that would play out. Because, as I said, there's no Buffett policy yet. What the president's put forward is kind of a series of placeholder policies that focus on people making over $250,000 a year and focus on corporations, but don't fully get at this Buffett rule. But I think that's right. I mean, we need to make sure that the tax code is fair, but also that it's competitive. And that means making sure we understand what's happening in the small business side. It also means reforming the corporate code so larger corporations can do more to hire workers and be more productive.
Mark Goldwein from the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, a bipartisan organization based in Washington, D.C., is our guest. We're talking about the Obama deficit reduction proposal, and we're now joined by Lynn in Prairie du Sac. Lynn, good morning.
Good morning. I just had a question for Mark. I was at Fighting Bob La Follette Fest this weekend, and Senator Bernie Sanders was talking about Social Security and suggested that if we raise the cap, right now it's at $106,000 to $250,000, that we could sustain Social Security at the level that it's at for another 75 years. And you had mentioned earlier that the committee had a plan that would sustain Social Security. And I'm just wondering if that is the same plan that Senator Sanders was referring to.
Well, here's the problem. In order to make Social Security stable for the long term, what you need to eventually do is bring its costs, that's how much it's paying benefits, and its revenues, how much it's collecting payroll tax, in line. Senator Sanders has put forward a plan which essentially eliminates the payroll tax cap. It doesn't raise it to 250. It actually, it's complicated, but effectively, it puts that extra 12.5% tax on all earnings. And puts a lot of money into the Social Security Trust Fund. And so that means that from that money, from the Trust Fund, we're able to pay out benefits for about the next 25 years. The problem is, in year 76, we're right back to where we started because we haven't actually brought the lines under control. That's why when most people look at Social Security reform, they look at what's called sustainable solvency, which means actually eventually getting costs and benefits in line. The Fiscal Commission proposed a plan that did include a piece of what Senator Sanders proposed. We proposed raising that taxable maximum, not eliminating it altogether, but raising it gradually so that it would cover a higher portion of wages. We also recommended asking people to work a little bit longer by raising the retirement age by 2 years over the next 75 years. So by 2075, the retirement age would be 69 instead of 67. We also asked higher earners to accept lower benefits, to accept slower growth of their benefits. And it's kind of through this combination of policies that we think we came to a balanced plan that asks for a little bit from everyone.
Mark Goldwein, were you surprised that you didn't see a later retirement age in the president's proposal?
I'm not surprised, but I am disappointed. I'm disappointed that the president hasn't addressed Social Security. I was disappointed when the House Republicans didn't address Social Security in their proposal either. I don't think it's the third rail of American politics anymore. I think the American public understands it needs to be brought under control. I'm just not sure that the politicians understand that yet.
Lynn, thank you for joining us. The Senior Policy Director for the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, Mr. Mark Goldwein, is our guest as we dig into the details of President Obama's budget deficit cutting proposal. Join the conversation at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Email us at WPR.org or comment on the Joy Cardine Facebook page. Checking Wisconsin weather, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and storms today. Temperatures will be in the mid-70s generally in the northwestern part of the state, maybe as cool as the upper 60s for a high temperature. Showers are likely tonight and tomorrow as well, with lows tonight between 45 and 55, highs tomorrow in the 50s and 60s throughout the state. I'm Dean Kallenbach. I'm in for Joy Cardine, and this is the Ideas Network of Public Radio. It's 7:49. I'm Dean Kallenbach, in for Joy Cardine. We'll go from the nation's pocketbook to your personal finances during our On Your Money after 8. Certified financial planner Kevin McKinley will be here with some great money-saving tips and answers to your personal finance questions. Again, that's On Your Money coming up after 8. Back now to talk about the plan President Obama unveiled yesterday to lower the federal deficit, including some tax hikes and spending cuts Mark Goldwine with the Nonprofit and Bipartisan Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget joins us. And Mark Goldwine, before we go back to calls, we've talked about various aspects of President Obama's plan so far this hour. Which provisions do you think have any real chance of seeing the light of day, given the tense political climate in Washington?
You know, if the super committee succeeds, I actually think a lot of these proposals have a chance of being part of the mix. On the spending side, the president, despite all the rhetoric, most of the things the president put forward, they're not big liberal plans. I think they're spending cuts that both sides can agree to, many of them at least. For example, he calls for reforming the post office to make it sustainable. He calls for changes to the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation. He calls for some new user fees to make sure we can afford our air security. He cuts overpayments in Medicare in a variety of sources. He asks wealthy Medicare beneficiaries to pay more in premiums. I think all of these could be part of the mix. I think on the spending side, there's actually a lot here that can be the building blocks of a more complete plan.
Ending Saturday mail delivery makes sense?
It's not my first choice. I like getting mail on Saturday just like everyone else. But the post office is bleeding. And they clearly can't afford to continue to operate how they're operating. And I think giving them more freedom to decide when and how to deliver mail is a necessity.
I think everybody sticks their bills in the mail on Friday anyway. That's all I get on Saturday. Larry from Madison joins us. And Larry, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you. Obama's plan requires federal employees to contribute more than they do toward their retirement. The guest supports this and indicated that federal employees do not contribute enough toward their retirement. However, their retirement is only part of their total compensation. I suspect that federal employees take less in salary in order to get a better retirement plan. State and local government employees in Wisconsin have a very good retirement benefit, but Jeffrey Keith at the Economic Policy Institute found that state and local employees in Wisconsin, although they have an excellent retirement benefit, when the total compensation package is taken into account, are paid 4.8% less than private sector employees, considering various factors such as employee education, hours spent on the job, et cetera. Taking those things into account, the state retirement part of the package does not seem excessive, and I suspect the same thing is true at the federal level, like the guest comment.
Those are great questions. Thanks for asking them. I'd say two things. One, there is a difference between federal employees and state and local employees in terms of compensation. Federal employees, on average, are paid more generously and have more job security than at the state and local level. That said, the studies are very mixed on whether federal employees are overpaid, underpaid, or paid about right relative to the private sector. I think I wouldn't call it a consensus, but I think the pseudo-consensus is that at the top, those people that are highly educated, the doctors and the lawyers and the PhDs, they're being underpaid relative to the private sector and the government. But those that are kind of entry level through middle, people that have college degrees and master's degrees, they do tend to be, in total compensation, paid higher than their private sector compatriots. That was certainly true the last couple of years, where until this year, federal employees were getting 2-4% cost of living adjustments. People in the private sector basically had wage freezes. I don't think we should be beating up on federal employees. They do important work. And I don't think that we should be slashing their salaries. But at the same time, we do have to recognize, one, if Washington is going to ask the American public to accept higher taxes, lower Medicare benefits, they're going to have to lead by first putting their own house in order. And two, federal employees are going to be part of this and going to have to contribute more to their own retirement and health, et cetera.
Thank you, Larry. Let's now move to Milwaukee and hear from Ray. Ray, what did you think of the president's speech and the proposal?
It's a little late, but I'm 100% for it. I wish he had started this argument the first day he walked into office, but now he's doing it. I'm for it. But I want to bring up, I load trucks by hand, semi-trucks, load them, unload them. Every day when I'm at work thinking, I'm paying 33% of my taxes, 33% of my wages and taxes, while stockbrokers and hedge fund dealers are paying 15% of their wages and taxes. There is a basic fairness issue in this country, which is so upside down. I don't care if the taxing those upper people doesn't solve our problem. I care about fairness. And basically, where the big waste is in our country is the military welfare complex. They haven't protected anybody from anything since World War II, yet they are taking the biggest chunk of the pie. Let's start slicing and dicing the military complex down. There's nothing to protect here if all the money is going to the soldiers and to making war and killing people around the world. You have nothing back here in America to protect.
Interesting point. Mark Goldwine, how about we know that the you've criticized the Obama plan for including a reduction in war spending, but what about further military spending cuts?
Yeah, well, the Department of Defense probably has more waste than any other single department in all of government. The recent legislation that was just passed, three, 4 weeks ago, did include some reductions in defense. But I'm not a defense expert, but I've looked at this issue closely, and frankly, I think we can go further, and we can actually even go further without hurting our core military mission. I mean, the Defense Department, I don't even want to get into all of the ways that they waste money, all the extra layers of bureaucracy, all the overpriced weapon systems, all the benefits to military folks, which, although important, don't always make sense to be structured the way they are. We could certainly do more to rein in on defense, and we could certainly do more to ask the wealthy. But at the end of the day, the drivers of the debt are growing health care and an aging population. And the things that are driving the debt is the growth of Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. And if we don't address those issues, we can postpone the date by which our debt will explode, but we can't avoid it forever. And so we need to address those programs along with the revenue piece and along with the defense piece and along with, you know, fixing the post office and along with cutting the other domestic spending.
Jerry on Facebook says, would means testing to determine whether a person would qualify for benefits like Social Security be effective? Mark Goldwine.
Well, I don't think that full-on means testing where we don't give people benefits is that sensible, because some people disagree with me, but I think it would create a bad incentive structure. But what we could do that's a little bit short of that is make these benefits far more progressive. On Medicare, that means asking wealthier people to pay higher premiums than everyone else. And they're starting to do that, but we can ask them more. On Social Security, right now your benefit is very strongly correlated to your wages during your lifetime. And the wealthier you are, the higher the benefit you get. We could pare that back some. There's not necessarily a good reason that somebody that's made $100,000 a year for their entire life should be getting a benefit that's far more generous than someone that's made $50,000 a year for their entire life, or someone that's made $20,000 a year for their entire life. So I think there's a way to ask the higher earners to contribute a lot more and accept lower benefits in these programs. Yes.
Well, one thing we can be assured about, and that is we'll be talking about deficit cutting for a while. And Mark Goldwine, we thank very much for you joining us this hour to talk about the president's plan.
Well, happy to be here.
Mark Goldwine is the Senior Policy Director for the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, a bipartisan nonprofit organization in Washington, D.C. that educates the public about significant financial policy. Thanks to Bill Martin for producing this program and for direction today, and for Amanda Magnus for on-air production. More to come. I'm Dean Kallenbach, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.